Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Coleman.
Hey, 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 welcome to the Rockcast. My name is Monty Colvin, and I'm glad you could join me. And I know many of you have just been counting the days waiting for this new episode. And well, the wait is over. Here I am with another show just packed with fun and mayhem. And well, I'm not going to lie, this one looks to be one of the best ever.
This is going to suck really bad.
Now, if this is your first time listening, here's what to expect. I'm probably going to give you some thoughtful commentaries on a wide range of topics. I will let you know what I've been watching and have not been watching on TV. I'm going to review some new music. And as always, I will tell you what you should like and what you shouldn't. But let's start out with something that I always enjoy, which is answering your questions. And the first one I got is from Jack Weston. And Jack says, "Hello, Monty. I'm probably one of the very few younger Galactic Cowboys fans right now. I'm only 17, but I'm a big GC fan, and I can't wait for the new album. I thought that I would send this message and ask a few questions to maybe get answered on Monty's Rockcast." Well, thanks, Jack. It's great to hear from you. And it's nice to know we have some younger fans out there. And I would be glad to answer your questions. The first one being, I'm a big Dream Theater fan. They're my all-time favorite band. Were they a significant influence on you guys? You definitely have some sound overlap. I know you guys know good old Mike Portnoy, but would you consider them a genuine big influence on your sound?" Well, that's an interesting question, Jack, and you might be surprised at my answer. But the truth is that I hadn't even heard of Dream Theater until I think it was before our first album may have even come out. And we played a show in New York, and Mike Portnoy came out to the show, and he introduced himself and said he was in a band called Dream Theater, and that was the first I'd ever found out about him. And then a couple of years later, after we'd put out our second album, Space in Your Face, I started seeing Dream Theater videos on Headbangers Ball, and I thought, yeah, you know, they're really cool, and maybe they'd be a cool band to tour with. And around that same time, our manager at the time said, who would you like to tour with? And they were one of the bands I mentioned. And to my surprise, we ended up getting the tour, and we spent a couple of months on the road with them. And they were just really great guys, very down to earth. And their fans were very nice to us also, even though we weren't really the prog band that they are. We just kind of went out every night and tried to rock as hard as we possibly could. But most of those shows were really good, and they eventually had us coming on stage and singing with them. They wanted us to do background vocals on the song Take the Time, and so every night we'd kind of run out there during that song and sing with them. Now, could we open shows for them now? I kind of doubt it. They've kind of turned into the prog gods at this point. And I'm not sure their musician nerd fans would like us that much. Or at least, I'm not sure how we would go over. But who knows, it was great back in the early 90s, I know that. But Jack's second question is, what is it like knowing Dream Theater, the biggest prog metal band ever, cited your album Space in Your Face as an influence on 6 Degrees of Inner Turbulence?
I've never heard of it.
Well, I did not know that. Apparently they said that. Okay, very cool. I would love to talk to them about that and find out what they thought. But I haven't talked to those guys in years. It's been a long time. The last time I talked to Portnoy, it was after a show when he was playing with Avenged Sevenfold. but that was probably about 15 years ago. But if I had to guess, I'm going to say it was probably vocals, because I know they really liked our harmonies. And on albums after that tour, I noticed that Portnoy was singing more. And so it's cool to think that we might have had something to do with that. Jack's next question is, what are some of your all-time favorite prog metal bands, older and newer? Well, you know, to be honest, I don't really listen to that much prog metal. There's been a few that I've heard and they blow my mind, but I don't really listen to them that much. Like Periphery, I guess they'd be considered that, but I don't really listen to a lot of it. I think they're great, but I'm probably not going to sit down and listen to an album over and over. And, well, let me ask you, would you consider Mastodon prog metal? If so, yes, I listen to Mastodon. But I'll tell you what I did listen to when I was younger, and it was before the term prog metal was even a thing. And those were bands like Rush and Kansas. And I'm talking early Rush and early Kansas. And those bands were a big influence on me and, in a way, an influence on Galactic Cowboys. And that would kind of take me back to your early question, which was Dream Theater a big influence on Galactic Cowboys? And I kind of have to say no. We were influenced by the bands that Dream Theater was influenced by. All that 70s prog music.
I did not know that.
Jack's next question is, what advice do you have for an upcoming musician wanting to start a band? Jack says he plays guitar and he wants to play Christian prog metal. Well, I have several thoughts on this subject, and the first one would be, regardless of the style of music you want to play, just make sure you're doing it for the right reasons, which should be because it's fun and because I enjoy it. The chances of you becoming a gigantic rock star someday are probably slim to none. So try not to worry about that or getting a huge following on TikTok or whatever. Just concentrate on finding some guys who want to play some music, have fun, and that you really gel with and get along with. If you do that, then who knows what could happen. It's like when I started Galactic Cowboys. I found the right guys, we had chemistry, and we just started creating music that we wanted to hear. And that would be my next piece of advice. If you want to just play cover tunes forever, that's fine. But if you want to do something that's really fulfilling, try creating your own sound. And by that, I don't mean trying to do what everyone else is doing. Try writing and putting together some things that no one's ever thought of putting together. Or at least that's what I've always tried to do, and that's what I would suggest.
Thank you for sharing. I had no idea.
And finally, Jack wanted to know what I thought of his Dream Theater album list. He said their perfect albums were Metropolis Part 2, Scenes from a Memory, Black Clouds and Silver Linings, Images and Words, and Train of Thought. Now, his Dream Theater albums that he thought were just amazing included A Dramatic Turn of Events, Awake, and 6 Degrees of Inner Turbulence. And then falling down the list was the albums by Dream Theater that were just great. Not totally amazing, not perfect, just great. And they were A View from the Top of the World, Dream Theater, and Distance Over Time. However, slipping all the way down the list to albums that were just good were The Astonishing and When Dream and Day Unite. Well, what did I think of that list, Jack? Well, I'd have to say that list was amazing. And I would say that list was perfect, but there's only one problem. I think I've only heard about one or two of those albums, so I really couldn't tell you if any of them were great or amazing or perfect. But I'm sure you're right. You would know better than I. But like I said, I love those guys. They're great people. And they're some of the most phenomenal musicians I've ever heard. But myself, I'm more of a song guy that likes melodies and just catchy hooks. and there are only so many mind-boggling riffs that I can absorb. And after Portnoy left the band, I just kind of lost interest, but now he's back, and I've heard some new stuff that's pretty cool, and hopefully I'll get to see him again someday. But thanks so much for your questions, Jack. It was great to hear from you, and I hope I hear from you again soon. Thank you for listening to the show. Next, I got three questions on Facebook Messenger from Todd Nall. And the first one is, Monty, hey man, is Ben Huggins okay? Oh, well, yeah, thanks for your concern, Todd. This is a question I get asked every single day, and it's been going around the internet. Everybody wants to know what happened to the singer of Galactic Cowboys, Ben Huggins. Because, oh my God, he disappeared off Facebook. What in the world could have happened?
I did not know he was still alive.
Well, I'm here to tell you that I have good news and bad news. The first news is that Ben's fine. He just wanted to take a break from Facebook, and I don't blame him. You see, for me, the only way I can make a living is by going on Facebook and advertising my art and the podcast and the band and so forth. So I pretty much have to be on Instagram and Facebook. Otherwise, I would drop off too, because I'm not one of those guys that goes on Facebook and argues with people about politics. If I cut my foot and start bleeding, I don't need to show you a picture of that. Because I'm just assuming that that's not something you want to see or hear about. And I'm not real sure why Ben took a break from Facebook. He didn't tell me. But Alex and I have had dinner with him and his wife a couple of times here lately, and he seems fine. And I'm sure he'll be back, probably even before I get this episode out. But that's the good news. Now here's the bad.
I don't want to hear it.
While taking a break from Facebook, Ben Huggins grew his beard back.
Why? Why?
And so once again, he's looking like Grizzly Adams.
That is bad news.
Now, Todd's second question is, Monty, how are you settling back into Houston? Well, thanks for asking, Todd. You know, Alex and I really are enjoying Houston. And it's not that things have changed dramatically. We're just having a good time being who we are. We don't really get out that much, but when we do, we've got good friends to share things with. And most of the time, we have no problem getting around to where we need to go. Now, the weather, that's a little bit of a different story. Even though it's not even summer yet, it's starting to get really muggy and hot. But that does not stop us from taking the dog for a walk every day. We just have to do it early in the morning.
That is so incredibly exciting.
And Todd's last question is, what's the latest on the new record from Galactic Cowboys? Yeah, you know, it's hard to believe it was a year ago we were mixing the album, and I thought, okay, well, this thing is going to be out in the summer of 2025. And of course, that did not happen, but I do have some really good news. As I'm telling you this, the album is getting manufactured right now. We sent in all the artwork and the credits, and it's all being pressed up. Now, we still don't have an official release date, but we feel pretty sure that we can put this thing out in July of 2026, not 27. So thank God it's getting close, and we can all start counting the days or weeks. Either way, it's going to happen, and in the next couple of months, we'll all have something new to listen to. And speaking of new things to listen to, Brian Herman on Facebook asked me about the new Metal Church album. He said, it's an 8 out of 10 for me. How many bloody metal skulls will you award it? Okay, Brian, well, I haven't really heard it yet, so let's check it out.
Change the scars.
Okay, well, first of all, I've never really gotten into metal church that much. Even back in the 80s and early 90s when I was heavily into thrash, they weren't one of my go-tos. But I do like the way this sounds. I like the guitars. And I think Dave Ellefson played on this album, and you can hear his bass really clear. It sounds great. But just being honest, I don't really care for the vocals. I think they fit this kind of music really well, but I don't know, just not for me. So the more I listen to this, there are some really cool riffs on here, and it's a really solid rocking album, so I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 Bloody Metal Skulls. I would go 3.5, but I'm going to say if you're into old school thrash and even Judas Priest, you're probably going to like this. Because you know what they say, there's always room for old school thrash.
Huh?
Alright, got another email here from Michael Ferrero. I'll say that's how you pronounce it. And Michael said he's a new listener to the show, but a longtime GC fan. And he has a few random questions for me. And the first one is, have you ever pictured yourself designing album artwork for one of your favorite bands? If so, what band would you do it for, and how would you go about creating for that band? Well, first of all, I am always open to doing album covers, and I've done a lot of them, not only for Galactic Cowboys, but a lot of bands get a hold of me and just say, hey, would you do our album cover? Now, a lot of these bands weren't very well known, and I don't care, because the commissions are the main way I make my living. If you want me to do a family portrait or a painting of your dog or whatever, I'll do it. And I've had several bands that had some crazy ideas that I just went, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not sure I can pull that off. But most of the time, they give me an idea and I go, okay, well, I think I can play with that. And I'll take the ideas they have and I'll make a sketch and see what they think. Now, what's a favorite band I would want to do an album cover for? Well, Galactic Cowboys is one of my favorite bands, and I just did the album cover for our new album. Well, actually, I did it about a year ago, but nevertheless, I really think you're going to like it because I think it's probably the best album cover for Galactic Cowboys I've ever done.
Oh, good for you!
Now, Michael has another art-related question. Have you always favored painting human subjects, or does such a thing as a Montyverse alternative reality landscapes exist? In other words, have you ever considered doing a Roger Dean floating island weirdness or something like that? Well, I have done some landscapes in the past. I've also put landscapes in the backgrounds of some of my paintings. But for the most part, I just like the human figure. They're very challenging to do, but when you get them right, they're very rewarding. And finally, Michael wants to know if I've ever heard of the following bands: Jacob's Dream, Resurrection Kings, or Savior Machine. Well, from the band names, I'm kind of thinking these are probably Christian bands. And so, no, I haven't heard them, but I have heard of Savior Machine. A long time ago, I think I saw them in some kind of magazine, or they were playing a festival maybe we were playing. But I'm not familiar with their music, so maybe I should check them out sometime.
Yes, you should.
All right, well, thanks for your questions, Michael. But let's move on now to something I've been doing on the last couple of episodes. And this is where I take a list from a particular website or publication, and I give you my thoughts. And this first one is just a ridiculous list from, once again, Rolling Stone magazine. And this one was the 50 greatest bands of all time. And keep in mind, this was the 50 greatest bands, not 200, not 100, 50, like 50 Cent. And I'm actually surprised that he wasn't on the list, even though he's not a band. But I'm sure he'll probably show up on another list later if I get to another list.
He's that great!
So as I start this list at number 50, just start rolling around some of the names in your head. Like, who could be on here? These are the 50 greatest of all time. Not, you know, not in the last 10 years or 20 years even. Of all time. And so forgive me if I sound a little confused or possibly irritated that at number 50, it's Franz Ferdinand.
You cannot be serious!
Okay, I'll admit it. There might have been a time when they had a song or maybe two songs that I can remember that I sang along to at one point. But get the hell out of here with them being on this list, period.
It is ridiculous!
Now at 49, it's Dire Straits. And okay, Mark Knopfler, great guitar player. They wouldn't have been on my list, but alright, I'm fine. Number 48 is Red Hot Chili Peppers. Alright, 47 is CCR. And I never liked them. I can't stand what's-his-name's voice, but, you know, that's just me. They had a lot of hits. 46 is Cream. 45 is Allman Brothers. 44 is Public Enemy. Kind of hard for me to think of them as a band, but all right, got to have some rap in there. After all, it's Rolling Stone. But at 43, and I will fight you on this, it's the Ramones. And I'm sure there's a lot of you out there going, oh, they sucked. But I will say, have you ever seen them live or any live footage of them? They flat out brought the energy and they rocked. And they gave us tons of memorable songs. And they basically invented a genre. Not to mention, my cousin Dee Dee was in the band and they were one of the coolest bands ever. And they influenced a generation of musicians, including me, to Green Day, to, dare I say, Metallica. So yes, they should be on the list.
You could not be more wrong!
At 42, Primal Scream somehow made this list. I would have never thought of them, nor would I have thought of Sonic Youth at 41, but I am not surprised that the Sex Pistols are at 40. Now, could the Pistols play like Dream Theater or somebody like that? No. But for that time and what they did, they were important. And they carved a place in history. What are you going to do? But at 39, this is where Rolling Stone starts pissing me off. They've got Black Sabbath. How do you put them so low on this list? What an insult. But I'll move on to 38 is The Cure, 37 AC/DC. Well, of course they should be on this list, but why are they not in the top 15 or top 10? 36, it's Kraftwerk. I only know one of their songs, but whatever. They probably had something to do with electronic music getting to be what it was, so I'll give them a pass. 35 is Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. I'm okay with that. But at 34, I'm not okay with the Stone Roses. Oh, okay, let's move on. 33 is Sly Stone, the band, apparently. At 32 is Genesis. Yes, absolutely should have been on here. And despite the fact that they did a bunch of stuff in their later years that I could not stand, their early stuff was amazing. But apparently a better band than Genesis, AC/DC, and Black Sabbath is Arcade Fire.
Truly insane.
Now, I have nothing personal against Arcade Fire, but I'm just saying they should not have been on this list. But at least Rolling Stone had the decency not to put them ahead of Deep Purple, who comes in at 30. At 29 is The Band, which I'm going to say, okay, fine. I'm all right with that because I actually had dinner with Robbie Robertson back in the 90s. It was one of those crazy, so this just happened moments, but I'll never forget that, so okay, The Band. At 28, love them or hate them, Guns N' Roses is one of the greatest bands ever. At 27, hate them or really hate them, Pearl Jam.
I hate them.
At 26, okay, you're going to think I'm making this up, but it's Wilco. Just barely edging out Wilco for the 25th spot is Metallica. I would have had them top 5, top 10, but I'm sure they're just thankful to be on this list at all. But now 24 is the Kinks, but the next three are just total Rolling Stone magazine. Because 23 is Talking Heads, 22 is the Strokes, and 21 is Joy Division. And I can just picture in my mind right now some little nerd sitting at his cubicle in Rolling Stone, and he's writing these names down, and he's saying, oh, I am so intelligent.
Running around with their pocket protectors and their white short-sleeve shirts.
At 20, we have Queen, and I find this criminally low, considering they were one of the most creative and incredible bands to ever exist. If you can't find a space for them in the top 10, then your list is crap.
And it's awful.
At 19 is T-Rex, 18 Depeche Mode, 17 REM. Well, yeah, I would have expected that. Rolling Stone loved them. At 16, we've got The Police, great band. 15 is The Smiths. At 14 is The Beach Boys. And while I'm not a big fan of Mike Love or all of the corny beach songs that they did, but Brian Wilson was a genius. And they're kind of legendary, so I'm fine with it. At 13 is Oasis, and I'm okay with them being on the list, but not at 13. I actually like Oasis, but being that far ahead of Metallica, I'd have to say, get out of the town.
Say that again.
Coming in at 12 is a band I wouldn't have even thought of for this list, but it's The Byrds. Number 11 is The Clash. Number 10 is The Doors. And, you know, The Doors are one of those bands that's legendary because of their singer. But I think if you asked people, you know, be honest. Do you really want to hear Riders on the Storm ever again? I think they'd say no.
No thanks.
I mean, really, Riders on the Storm. Riders on the Storm.
Hey!
I'm sorry, dozed off there for a minute. Back to the list. At number 9, and I know you're thinking, okay, this is where the big heavy hitters start, like Van Halen, but no, we get The Velvet Underground. And once again, I can see that nerd sitting at his desk making out this list. And he says, yeah, I put the Velvets at 9 because Lou Reed rules. But whatever, at number 8, it's Nirvana. You knew they'd be on here. Number 7 is Radiohead. And once again, this is one of those critics' darlings. It's one of their pet bands, and if you don't get it, then you're just not as cool and hip as they are.
What, you don't like Radiohead? Well, I guess you're just not that smart. Okay, Computer, one of the greatest albums ever made. I had it at number one on my list. Radiohead, pure genius.
Yeah, whatever. But at number six, Rolling Stone finally gets something right with The Who. Number five is Zeppelin. Number four is Pink Floyd. Number three is U2. U2. Well, I guess some people think so. To me, they hit their peak in, 1982, maybe? I loved their first two albums and a little bit of their third. Since then, not so much. But to each his own. But finishing up the list at number two, the Rolling Stones. At number one, the Beatles. And I cannot argue with that. But here's where the fun really begins. Who did they leave off? And this is where they really piss me off. Because not on the list is Aerosmith.
Ah!
Not on the list, Van Halen.
Oh!
Not on the list, Kiss. No Boston, no Foreigner, no Rush, no Cheap Trick, no Alice in Chains.
Come on!
And say what you want about Fleetwood Mac and the Eagles, they sold a gazillion albums. I mean, granted, I knew they wouldn't have someone like Thin Lizzy, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, Megadeth, UFO, you know, bands that I love. But couldn't you have left off Franz Ferdinand and put somebody like Kansas on there? Or Lynyrd Skynyrd? I mean, I literally can't go a day without hearing Sweet Home Alabama on my car radio. So, I'll try not to get too upset from this list, but I do have one thing to say to the people at Rolling Stone. The next time you sit down to do a list, could you just do me a favor and try and pull your head out of your butts? I know your heads are huge from your gigantic egos, and I realize you have political agendas that need to be fulfilled. But maybe at some point, just give it a shot.
It would be so nice.
Alright, I was going to do another list that New York Times put out, but I'll save that for next time. For now, I had a couple of other things I wanted to tell you about. And the first one involves technology. And let me ask you, do any of you have one of these gadgets from Amazon, and you put them somewhere in your house, and you can talk to Alexa? I'm not even sure what they're called, and I wouldn't have one in my house if it was just me. But Alex got one for us, and I just find it extremely creepy. Because out of nowhere, it'll just start talking to you. And therefore, I'm sure it's listening to everything we say. Which is kind of dangerous for someone like me, because when I'm just hanging around the house, there's a lot of stuff that comes out of my mouth that I wouldn't usually say in public. Like, I'm pretty sure at some point the police are going to show up at my door and they're going to say, we understand there's someone who lives here who isn't politically correct. And apparently they have a problem with there not being any white people in commercials anymore. And I'll have to go, all right, that's me, I'm busted. But how do I really know that Alexa is listening to us all the time? Well, the other day I woke up and I couldn't go back to sleep and I told Alex. But before Alex could even answer me, Alexa butts in and says, I can help you with that. How about some music or relaxing sound effects? And I said, oh, well, okay. And Alexa said, okay, that'll be $9.95. And I said, no, followed by some very harsh words that Alexa probably didn't appreciate.
You're mean.
Another random thought that I've got today is that there's a new album out from Seven Dust. It's called One, and I thought I'd check it out and review it.
Sounds good to me. Let's do it.
Believe yourself when all
Well, the first thing I'll have to say is, my God, this sounds good. Those guitars are just crushing. And I'm loving the melodies and the vocals. This is strong. You know, Seven Dust has always had great riffs, but their songwriting at times has been kind of hit and miss with me. They get to the chorus and sometimes it just all kind of sounds the same or it doesn't grab me. But this is actually my second time listening to this album, and I would say this time all the songs are grabbing me. The riffs are just killing it, and these choruses are just really catchy. I'm loving it. You know, about 5 years ago, Seven Dust put out an album that I thought was just tremendous. And I'm pretty sure it was my album of the year. And this one may be on its way to another Rockcast album of the year. Because this is just excellent all the way through. So on a scale of 1 to 5, I'm going to give this one 4.8 Bloody Metal Skulls. I just love how it sounds. The guitars sound great. It's got a great mixture of awesome riffs and great melodies. And I'm giving it the Rockcast stamp of approval. Time now for some What's on TV. This is where I tell you what I've been watching and what I liked and what I didn't like. And I'll start with a documentary I watched about Billy Idol. And I liked it. Now, if it would have been about Billie Eilish, I would have hated it. But this was good. Had a lot of good interviews. Took you through his entire life. And you forget how huge Billy Idol was back in the, what was it, the 80s, 90s? I don't know. I only saw him once, and Steve Stevens was not with him that night. But Faith No More opened the show, and that's kind of who I really went to see. But as I was watching this, I'm like, you know, I really loved a lot of Billy Idol stuff. And I'll admit, a lot of it had to do with Steve Stevens at the time. I thought that guy was great. But of course, as is the case with all rock and roll documentaries, there's always that place where, and then he fell into drugs, and he almost died, but he didn't. And whenever I watch one of these things, it always reminds me that, yeah, I made a good choice by not getting into all that. I don't think I really missed out on anything. But Billy Idol did all that, and he survived. But he went through a lot, and these days it kind of seems like he's gotten his life together. So good for him, and if you like Billy Idol, I just did a painting of him that you can find on my website, MontyColvinArt.com. Or if it sells before you hear this, then you can buy a print.
I mean, I probably should.
Okay, next, bear with me. I'm going to talk a little bit about sports. And to all of you who do not care about sports, I'm sorry. But sports has been a big part of my life for most of my life. My dad was a big sports fan, so I started watching it too when I was around 9 or 10. And this was back in the 70s, and my dad would take me to see the Phoenix Suns, and I got to see Hall of Famers in person like Wilt Chamberlain, John Havlicek, Pete Maravich, and Connie Hawkins. And so I go back a long way. And recently, I think it's on Amazon Prime, but they had this documentary series called Soul Power. And it was about the history of the American Basketball Association, the ABA. And it was really interesting. They had a lot of great old footage. And that was cool because back then, you rarely saw an ABA game on television. And so we really didn't get to see Dr. J when he was playing in the ABA. You only kind of heard about it or saw a highlight once in a while. But then the ABA and the NBA finally merged, and you got to see a lot of these guys for the first time. And as it turned out, they were incredible players. And so I really enjoyed watching this series because it took me back to a time when I just really enjoyed watching basketball so much. As opposed to now.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, here it comes, my latest rant about the NBA. I mean, I hate to be so critical, but the game I used to love so much has just become almost unwatchable. All the flopping and bad officiating. A lot of games just turn into free throw contests. And most of the players are just so unlikable. But weirdly enough, the worst part for me has become the announcers. Back in the 70s, 80s, even some of the 90s, you'd have your play-by-play guy and then a former NBA player. And the commentator was just there to kind of throw in some stuff once in a while. In the present NBA telecast, there are now three announcers, one of whom is usually a woman. And the best I can tell is their job is to fill up every single second of airtime. There can never be a moment of silence, ever. And it doesn't matter if the camera is put on just some guy sitting on the bench. This must be explained in detail. And it's gotten to the point where I literally have to turn the sound off. Especially if it's Doris Burke or Candace Parker. And I can best explain it this way. Have you ever gone to a movie or a ball game and there's two people sitting behind you and they're talking really loud through the whole thing? And you just want to turn around and say, will you please shut up? Yeah, well, that's the way I feel when I'm watching a game on NBC or ESPN or TNT or Peacock or Amazon Prime or wherever the hell you find these things.
It begins to drive me into a frustrated rage.
Now, here's a couple of shows that have completely different vibes. The first one is Ink Master. I really love this show, and I've been going through all the seasons. And it's kind of weird because I have no tattoos myself, and I have no desire to even get one. But I love the art of it. I love the way they talk about composition and line work, and I've actually learned a few things. But the one thing that I can't relate to, and it's a big part of the show, is that apparently in order to be on Ink Master, you have to be a tough guy. Or at least really try hard to act like you're a badass. Like, everyone on this show has tattoos on their necks or on their face, and they just act like they're ready to fight somebody. And I'm always like, well, why don't you just let your art speak for itself? Do you really have to put everyone else down? Because I know for myself, I like to encourage other artists or appreciate what they do. Because being an artist, especially a professional artist, is not easy. But these guys on Ink Master are just constantly at each other and downright hateful to each other. Which is the exact opposite of the people on Love on the Spectrum on Netflix. It's people with autism trying to find love, and some of them have never even been on a date before. And these are just some of the sweetest people I've ever seen, and my heart just really goes out to them. Most of them are just really kind and polite to everyone, and for the most part, they're very accepting of others. And I just find that so refreshing and kind of touching.
I just wonder how that can possibly be.
All right, let's wrap things up with some odds and ends. First, a couple of shout-outs, the first one being to my buddy Jeff Moore. Jeff and I have been friends for a long, long time. He was someone who I talked to a lot when I was going through my divorce. He helped me through that. And over the years, I think he's commissioned me to do about 4, 5, 6 paintings for him. And he's just been a great friend. Well, recently, Jeff came to visit Alex and I, and we hung out and talked, and then he ended up helping me fix my fence. He showed me how to grill meat, because he's great at that, and I am not. And then right before he left, he walks in and hands me this brand new acoustic guitar. And I'm like, dude, what is this? And he says, happy birthday, I knew you needed one. And actually, I really did need one. Because believe it or not, I haven't had one for a long time. I used to have this old beat up Ovation acoustic guitar, and I wrote My School and Speak to Me and songs like that on it. But I ended up giving it to my daughter Zoe years ago, and I just never replaced it. So Jeff Moore, you are just an incredible friend, and I appreciate you, brother. I also wanted to give a shout out to another friend, Michael in Texas. And he's going through some serious health issues right now. And I just want him to know that I'm praying for him, and I hope all of you out there will too. Also, happy Mother's Day to Alex and all the moms out there. You are very appreciated. I had a sweet, loving mom, and I really miss her. Now, in other news, if you'd like to support this show, please go to my website, montycalvinart.com. I've got paintings and I've got some new prints that are really cool. And if you'd like me to do something special for you, just message me. I've also put a lot of my paintings on t-shirts that you can buy now on TeePublic. And I gotta say, they're great shirts. They look really good and I've bought several of them myself. Only problem is I don't make much money off of them. And occasionally, TeePublic will take one of my shirts down for no good reason and without warning. So if you want one of my shirts, make sure you jump on it quickly. They honestly are the coolest rock and roll t-shirts in the history of mankind. So check out my TeePublic store, and if you need the link, just message me. What could be easier than that?
I am not capable.
And finally, I got a message on Facebook from a Mr. Jeff Gleason. And he reminded me that the band Seosin has a brand new song out. And I guess he knew that Seosin is one of my favorite bands of all time. If I were to make out a list of my 50 favorite bands ever, they would be on it. So allow me now to review their new song. It's called Starting Over Again. my God, what a great chorus. I love everything about this band. Love the singer, Cove Reber. The guitar players are great. They just come up with the most creative guitar parts. And the drummer, Alex Rodriguez, is literally one of my favorite drummers of all time. So I am loving this new Seosin song. Can't wait for the new album. Well, another rock cast has got to come to an end. That's going to do it for me for now, but I will be back soon with more fun and mayhem. But until then, this has been Monty saying take care. Don't let anyone tell you what to like, unless it's me. And you should definitely like the new Seosin. And
rock on!
Gave it up, but you couldn't get enough.
Has been Monty's Rockcast.
That's it.